A cigar, your lordship.
Brandy, my lord.
Lord Dunobbs sat back in the comfort of his chair. His feet only just reached the ground. Brandy and cigars, eh? This was the life, all right. He took a deep puff at the cigar. We were just talking, my lord, about the future governance of the city, now that poor Lord Vetinari's health is so bad.
Nobby nodded. This was the kind of thing you talked about when you were a nob. This was what he'd been born for.
The brandy was giving him a pleasant warm feeling.
It would obviously upset the current equilibrium if we looked for a new patrician at this point, said another armchair. What is your view, Lord Dunobbs?
Oh, yeah, right. The guilds would fight like cats in a sack, said Nobby. Everyone knows that.
A masterly summary, if I may say so.
There was a general murmur of agreement from the other chairs.
Nobby grinned. Ah, yes, this was the bee's pyjamas, and no mistake, hobnobbing with his fellow nobs, talking big talk about important matters, instead of having to think up reasons why the tea-money tin was empty. Ah, yes.
A chair said, "Besides, are any of the guild leaders up to the task? They can organize a bunch of tradesmen, but ruling an entire city, I think not. Gentlemen, perhaps it is time for a new direction. Perhaps it is time for blood to reveal itself."
Odd way of putting it, Nobby thought, but clearly this is how you were supposed to speak.
"At a time like this," said a chair, "the city will surely look at those representatives of its most venerable families. It would be in all our interests if such a one would take up the burden."
"He'd need his head examined, if you want my opinion," said Nobby.
He took another swig of the brandy and waved the cigar expansively.
"Still, not to worry," he said. "Everyone knows we've got a king hanging around. No problem there. Send for Captain Carrot. That's my advice."
Another evening folded over the city in layers of fog. When Carrot arrived back at the watch-house, Corporal Littlebottom made a face at him and indicated with the flicker of her eyes the three people sitting grimly on the bench against one wall.
"They want to see an officer," she hissed. "But St. Colan isn't back, and I knocked on Mr. Vimes's door, and I don't think he's in."
Carrot composed his features into a welcoming smile.
"Mrs. Palm," he said, "and Mr. Boggis and Dr. Downey, I am so sorry. We're rather stretched at present, what with the poisoning and this business with the golems."
The head of the Assassin's Guild smiled, but only with his mouth.
"It's about the poisoning we wish to speak," he said. "Is there somewhere a little less public?"
"Well, there's the canteen," said Carrot. "It'll be empty at this time of night, if you'd just step this way."
"You do well for yourselves here, I must say," said Mrs. Palm. "A canteen."
She stopped as she stepped through the door.
"People eat in here?" she said.
"Well, grumble about the coffee mostly," said Carrot, "and write their reports. Commander Vimes is keen on reports."
"Captain Carrot," said Dr. Downey firmly, "we have to talk to you on a grave matter concerning... what have I sat in?"
Carrot brushed a chair hurriedly.
"Sorry, sir, we don't seem to have much time to clean up. Leave it for now, leave it for now."
The head of the Assassin's Guild leaned forward with his hands pressed together.
"Captain Carrot, we are here to discuss this terrible matter of the poisoning of Lord Vetinari.
You really ought to talk to Commander Vimes.
I believe that on a number of occasions Commander Vimes has made derogatory comments to you about Lord Vetinari," said Dr. Downey.
"You mean like he ought to be hung, except they can't find a twisty enough rope?" said Carrot.
"Oh, yes, but everyone does that."
"Do you?"
"Well, no," Carrot admitted.
"And I believe he personally took over the investigation of the poisoning?"
"Well, yes, but didn't you think that was odd?"
"No, sir, not when I thought about it. I think he's got a sort of soft spot for the patrician in his way. He once said that if anyone was going to kill Vetinari, he'd like it to be him."
"Indeed.
But he was smiling when he said it. Sort of smiling, anyway."
"He visits his lordship most days, I believe?"
"Yes, sir.
And I understand that his efforts to discover the poisoner have not reached any conclusions."
"Not as such, sir," said Carrot. "We've found a lot of ways he's not being poisoned."
Downey nodded at the others.
"We would like to inspect the commander's office," he said.
"Oh, I don't know if that's..." Carrot began.
"Please think very carefully," said Dr. Downey. "We three represent most of the guilds in this city. We feel we have a good reason for inspecting the commander's office. You will, of course, accompany us to see that we do nothing illegal."
Carrot looked awkward. "I suppose if I'm with you," he said.
"That's right," said Downey. "That makes it official."
Carrot led the way.
"I don't even know if he's back," he said, opening the door.
"As I said, we've been..."
"Oh." Downey peered around him and at the figure slumped over the desk.
"It would appear that Sir Samuel is in," he said, "but quite out of it."
"I can smell the drink from here," said Mrs. Palm. "It's terrible what drink will do to a man."
"A whole bottle of Bear Hugger's finest," said Mr. Boggess. "All right for some, eh?"
"But he hasn't touched a drop all year," said Carrot, giving the recumbent Vimes a shake. "He goes to meetings about it and everything."
"Now let us see," said Downey. He pulled open one of the desk drawers.
"Captain Carrot," he said, "can you witness that there appears to be a bag of greyish powder in here?"
"I will now..." Vimes's hand shot out and slammed the drawer on the man's fingers. His elbow rammed back into the assassin's stomach, and as Downey's chin jerked down, Vimes's forearm swung upwards and caught him full on the nose. Then Vimes opened his eyes.
"What's that? What's that?" he said, raising his head. "Dr. Downey, Mr. Boggess, Carrot, hmm?"
"What? What?" screamed Downey. "You struck me!"
"Oh, I'm so sorry," said Vimes, concern radiating from every feature as he pushed the chair back into Downey's groin and stood up. "I'm afraid I must have dropped off, and of course, when I woke up and found someone stealing from my..."
"You're raving drunk, man," said Mr. Boggess.
Vimes' features froze.
"Indeed. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers," he snarled, prodding the man in the chest. "A peck of bloody pickled peppers is what Peter Piper damn well picked."
"Do you want me to continue?" he said, poking the man until his back was against the wall. "It doesn't get much better."
"What about this packet?"
shouted Downey, clutching his streaming nose with one hand and waving at the desk with the other. Vimes still wore a wild-eyed, mirthless grin.
"Ah, well, yes," he said. "You've got me there. A highly dangerous substance." "Ah, you admit it?"
"Yes, indeed. I suppose I have no alternative but to dispose of the evidence." Vimes grabbed the packet, ripped it open, and tipped most of the powder into his mouth.
Mmm, he said, powder spraying everywhere as he masticated. "Feel that tingle on the tongue."
"But that's arsenic," said Boggess.
"Good gods, is it?" said Vimes, swallowing. "Amazing. I've got this dwarf downstairs, you know, clever little bugger, spends all his time with pipes and chemicals and things to find out what is arsenic and what isn't. And all the time here's you, able to spot it just by looking. I've got to hand it to you."
He dropped the torn packet into Boggess's hand, but the thief jerked back and the packet tumbled to the floor, spraying its contents.
"Excuse me," said Carrot. He knelt down and peered at the powder.
It is traditionally the belief of policemen that they can tell what a substance is by sniffing it and then gingerly tasting it. But this practice had ceased in the watch ever since Constable Flint had dipped his finger into a black market consignment of ammonium chloride cut with radium, said,
"Yes, this is definitely slab werble werble sclup,"
and had to spend 3 days tied to his bed until the spiders went away. Nevertheless, Carrot said,
"I'm sure this isn't poisonous."
He licked his finger and tried a bit.
"It's sugar," he said.
Downey, his composure severely compromised, waved a finger at Vimes.
"You admitted it was dangerous," he screamed.
"Right, take too much of it and see what it does to your teeth," bellowed Vimes. "What did you think it was?"
"We had information," Boggess began.
"Oh, you had information, did you?" said Vimes.
"You hear that, Captain? They had information, so that's all right."
"We acted in good faith," said Boggess.
"Let me see," said Vimes. "Your information was something along the lines of Vimes is dead drunk in the watch house and he's got a bag of arsenic in his desk. And I'll just bet you wanted to act in good faith, eh?"
Mrs. Palm cleared her throat. "This has gone far enough. You are correct, Sir Samuel," she said. "We were all sent a note." She handed a slip of paper to Vimes. It had been written in capitals. "And I can see we have been misinformed," she added, glaring at Boggess and Downey. "Do allow me to apologize. Come, gentlemen."
She swept out of the door. Boggis followed her quickly. Downey dabbed at his nose. "What's the guild price on your head, Sir Samuel?" he said.
$20,000.
"Really? I think we shall definitely have to upgrade you."
"Delighted. I shall have to buy a new bear trap."
"I'll, show you out," said Carrot. When he hurried back, he found Vimes leaning out of the window and feeling the wall below it. "Not a brick dislodged," Vimes muttered. "Not a tile loose, and the front office has been manned all day. Odd, that." He shrugged and walked back to his desk, where he picked up the note. "And I shouldn't think we'll be able to find any clues on this," he said. "There's too many greasy finger marks all over it." He put down the paper and glared at Carrot. "When we find the man responsible," he said, "somewhere at the top of the charge sheet is going to be forcing Commander Vimes to tip a whole bottle of single malt onto the carpet. That's a hanging offence." He shuddered. There were some things a man should not have to do.
"It's disgusting," said Carrot. "Fancy them even thinking that you'd poison the patrician."
"I'm offended that they think I'd be daft enough to keep the poison in my desk drawer," said Vimes, lighting a cigar.
"Right," said Carrot. "Did they think you were some kind of fool who'd keep evidence like that where anyone could find it?"
"Exactly," said Vimes, leaning back. "That's why I've got it in my pocket."
He put his feet on the desk and blew out a cloud of smoke. He'd have to get rid of the carpet. He wasn't going to spend the rest of his life working in a room haunted by the smell of departed spirits. Carrot's mouth was still open.
"Oh, good grief," said Vimes. "Look, it's quite simple, man. I was expected to go, at last, alcohol, and chug-a-lug the lot without thinking. Then some respectable pillars of the community..." He removed the cigar from his mouth and spat. "We're going to find me, in your presence too, which is a nice touch, with the evidence of my crime neatly hidden, but not so well hidden that they couldn't find it." He shook his head sadly. "The trouble is, you know, that once the taste's got you, it never lets go."
"But you've been very good, sir," said Carrot. "I've not seen you touch a drop for..."
"Oh, that," said Vimes. "I was talking about policing, not alcohol. There's lots of people will help you with the alcohol business, but there's no one out there arranging little meetings where you can stand up and say, 'My name is Sam, and I'm a really suspicious bastard.'"
He pulled a paper bag out of his pocket.
"We'll get Littlebottom to have a look at this," he said. "I damn sure wasn't going to try tasting it, so I nipped down to the canteen and filled a bag with sugar out of the bowl. It was but the work of a moment to fish Nobby's butts out of it, I might add."
He opened the door, poked his head out into the corridor, and yelled,
"Littlebottom!"
To Carrot, he added, "You know, I feel quite perked up. The old brain has begun to work at last. You know the golem that did the killing?"
"Yes, sir."
"Ah, but do you know what was special about it?"
"Can't think, sir," said Carrot, "except that it was a new one. The golems made it themselves, I think. But of course they needed a priest for the words, and they had to borrow Mr. Hopkinson's oven. I expect the old men thought it would be interesting. They were historians, after all."
It was Vimes's turn to stand there with his mouth open. Finally he got control of himself.
"Yes, yes, of course," he said, his voice barely shaking. "Yes, I mean, well, that's obvious, plain as the nose on your face, but, have you worked out what else is special about it?"
he added, trying to keep any trace of hope out of his voice.
"You mean the fact that it's gone mad, sir?"
"Well, I didn't think it was a winner of the Ankh-Morpork Mr. Sanity Award," said Vimes.
"I mean, they drove it mad, sir, the other golems. They didn't mean to, but it was built in, sir. They wanted it to do so many things. It was like their child, I think, all their hopes and dreams. And when they found out it had been killing people, well, that's terrible to a golem. They mustn't kill. And it was their own clay doing it."
"It's not a great idea for people, either."
"But they'd put all their future in it."
"You wanted me, Commander?" said Cheery.
"Oh, yes. Is this arsenic?" said Vimes, handing her the packet. Cheery sniffed at it.
"It could be arsenous acid, sir. I'll have to test it, of course."
"I thought acid sloshed about in jars," said Vimes. What's that on your hands?"
"Nail varnish, sir."
"Nail varnish?"
"Yes, sir."
Fine, fine. Funny, I thought it would be green."
"Wouldn't look good on the fingers, sir."
"I meant the arsenic, Littlebottom."
"Oh, you can get all sorts of colours of arsenic, sir. The sulphides, that's the ore, sir, can be red or brown or yellow or grey, sir. And then you cook them up with nitre, and you get arsenous acid, sir, and a load of nasty smoke. Really bad."
"Dangerous stuff," said Vimes.
"'Not good at all, sir, but useful, sir,' said Cheery. "'Tanners, dyers, painters. "'It's not just poisonous that have got a use for arsenic.'
"'I'm surprised people aren't dropping dead of it all the time,' said Vimes.
"'Oh, most of them use golems, sir.'
The words stayed in the air even after Cheery stopped speaking. Vimes caught Carrot's eye and started to whistle hoarsely under his breath.
"'This is it,' he thought. "'This is where we filled ourselves up with so many questions that they're starting to overflow and become answers.'
He felt more alive than he had for days. The recent excitement still tingled in his veins, kicking his brain into life. It was the sparkle you got with exhaustion, he knew. You were so bone-weary that a shot of adrenaline hit you like a falling troll. They must have it all now. All the bits, the edges, the corners, the whole picture, all there, just waiting to be pieced together.
"'These golems,' said Carrot, "'they'd be covered in arsenic, would they?'
"'Could be, sir. I saw one at the Alchemist's Guild building in Quirm, and it had even got arsenic plated on its hands, sir, on account of stirring crucibles with its fingers.'
"'They don't feel heat,' said Vimes.
"'Or pain,' said Carrot.
"'That's right,' said Cheery. She looked uncertainly from one to the other.
"'You can't poison them,' said Vimes.
"'And they'll obey orders,' said Carrot, "'without speaking.'
"'Golems do all the really mucky jobs,' said Vimes.
"'You could have mentioned this before, Cheery,' said Carrot.
"'Well, you know, sir, golems are just there, sir. No one notices golems.'
"'Grease under his fingernails,' said Vimes to the room in general. "'The old man scratched at his murderer. Grease under his fingernails, with arsenic in it.'
He looked down at the notebook still on his desk.
"'It's there,' he thought. "'Something we haven't seen.' But we've looked everywhere, so we've seen the answer and haven't seen that it is the answer. And if we don't see it now, at this moment, we'll never see it at all.
No offence, sir, but that's probably not a help, said Cheery's voice somewhere in the distance. So many of the trades that use arsenic involve some kind of grease.
Something we don't see, thought Vimes, something invisible.
Now, it wouldn't have to be invisible. Something we don't see because it's always there. Something that strikes in the night. And there it was. He blinked.
The glittering stars of exhaustion were causing his mind to think oddly. Well, thinking rationally hadn't worked.
"No one move," he said.
He held up a hand for silence.
"There it is," he said softly. "There. On my desk. You see it?"
"What, sir?" said Carrot.
"You mean you haven't worked it out?" said Vimes.
"What, sir?"
"The thing that's poisoning his lordship. There it is, on the desk, see?"
"Your notebook?"
"No."
"He drinks Bear Hugger's whiskey?" said Cheery.
"I doubt it," said Vimes.
"The blotter?" said Carrot. "Poisoned pens? A packet of pent weeds?"
"Where are they?" said Vimes, patting his pockets.
"Just sticking out from under the letters in the in-tray," said Carrot.
He added reproachfully, "You know, sir, the ones you don't answer." Vimes picked up the packet and extracted another cigar.
"Thanks," he said. "Ha! I didn't ask Mildred Easy what else she took. But of course, they're a servant's little bonus too. And old Mrs. Easy was a seamstress, a proper seamstress. And this is autumn. Killed by the knights drawing in, see?"
Carrot crouched down and looked at the surface of the desk.
"Can't see it myself, sir," he said. "Of course you can't," said Vimes, "because there's nothing to see. You can't see it, that's how you can tell it's there. If it wasn't there, you'd soon see it."
He gave a huge, manic grin.
"Only you wouldn't. See?"
"You all right, sir?" said Carrot. "I know you've been overdoing it a bit these last few days."
"I've been underdoing it," said Vimes. "I've been running around looking for damn clues instead of just thinking for 5 minutes. What is it I'm always telling you?"
"Never trust anybody, sir."
"No, not that. Everyone's guilty of something, sir." "Not that either."
"Just because someone's a member of an ethnic minority doesn't mean they're not a nasty, small-minded little jerk, sir."
"When did I say that?"
"Last week, sir, after we'd had that visit from the Campaign for Equal Heights, sir."
"Well, not that. I mean, I'm pretty sure I always say something else that's very relevant here. Something pithy about police work."
"Can't remember anything right now, sir."
"Well, I'll damn well make something up and start saying it a lot from now on."
"Jolly good, sir,"
Carrot beamed. "It's good to see you your old self again, sir. Looking forward to kicking ass to prodding buttock, sir.
What have we found, sir?"
"You'll see,"
"'We're going to the palace. Fetch Angua, we might need her, and bring the search warrant.'
"'You mean the sledgehammer, sir?'
"'Yes. And Sergeant Colan, too.'
"'He hasn't signed in again yet, sir,' said Cheery. "'He should have gone off duty an hour ago.'
"'Probably hanging around somewhere, staying out of trouble,' said Vimes.
Wee Mad Arthur peered over the edge of the wall. Somewhere below Colon, two red eyes stared up at him.
"'Heavy, is it? Shh! Kick it with your other foot!'
There was a sucking sound. Colon winced. Then there was a plop, a moment of silence, and a loud crash of pottery down in the street.
"'The boot it was holding came off,' moaned Colon. "'How did that happen?'
It got lubricated.
Wee Mad Arthur tugged at a finger.
Up ye come, then. Can't.
Why not? I ain't holding on to you no more.
Arm's tired. Another 10 seconds, I'm going to be a chalk outline.
Nah, no one's got that much chalk.
Wee Mad Arthur knelt down so that his head was level with Colon's eyes.
If you're going to die, do you mind signing a chitty to say you promised me a dollar?
Down below there was a chink of pottery shards.
"'What was that?' said Colon. "'I thought the damn thing smashed up.'
Wee Mad Arthur looked down.
"'Do you believe in that reincarnation stuff, Mr. Colon?' he said.
"'You wouldn't get me touching that foreign muck,' said Colon.
"'Well, it's putting itself together like one of them jigsaw puzzles.'
"'Well done, Wee Mad Arthur,' said Colon. "'But I know you're just saying that so as I'll make the effort to haul myself upright. "'Statues don't go putting themselves back together when they're smashed up.'
"'Please yourself. It's done nearly a whole leg already.'
Colon managed to peer down through the small and smelly space between the wall and his armpit. All he could see were shreds of fog and a faint glow.
"'You sure?' he said.
"'You run around rat holes, you learns to see good in the dark,' said Wee Mad Arthur. "'Otherwise you're dead.'
Something hissed somewhere below Colon's feet. With his one booted foot and his toes, he scrabbled at the brickwork.
"'It's having a wee bit of trouble,' said Wee Mad Arthur conversationally. "'Looks like it's put its knees on the wrong way round.'
Dorfel sat hunched in the abandoned cellar where the golems had met. Occasionally the golem raised its head and hissed. Red light spilled from its eyes. If something had streamed back down through the glow, soared through the eye sockets into the red sky beyond, there would be... Dorfel huddled under the glow of the universe. Its murmur was a long way off, muted, nothing to do with Dorfel. The words stood around the horizon, reaching all the way to the sky. And a voice said quietly, "You... own yourself." Dorfel saw the scene again and again, saw the concerned face, hand reaching up, filling its vision, felt the sudden icy knowledge. "Own yourself." It echoed off the words, and then rebounded, and then rolled back and forth, increasing in volume until the little world between the words was gripped in the sound.
"Golem must have a master."
The letters towered against the world, but the echoes poured around them, blasting like a sandstorm. Cracks started and then ran zigzagging across the stone, and then the words exploded. Great slabs of them, mountain-sized, crashed in showers of red sand. The universe poured in. Dorfel felt the universe pick it up and bowl it over and then lift it off its feet and up. And now the golem was among the universe. It could feel it all around, the purr of it, the busyness. The spinning complexity of it, the roar. There were no words between you and it. You belonged to it, it belonged to you. You couldn't turn your back on it because there it was in front of you. Dorfel was responsible for every tick and swerve of it. You couldn't say, "I had orders." You couldn't say, "It's not fair." No one was listening. There were no words. You owned yourself. Dorfel orbited a pair of glowing suns and hurtled off again. Not, "Thou shalt not." Say, "I will not." Dorfel tumbled through the red sky, then saw a dark hole ahead. The golem felt it dragging at him and streamed down through the glow, and the hole grew larger and sped across the edges of Dorfel's vision. The golem opened his eyes.
"No, master."
Dorfel unfolded in one movement and stood upright. He reached out one arm and extended a finger. The golem pushed the finger easily into the wall where the argument had taken place, and then dragged it carefully through the splintering brickwork. It took him a couple of minutes, but it was something Dorfel felt needed to be said. Dorfel completed the last letter and poked a row of three dots after it. Then the golem walked away, leaving behind no master, dot, dot, dot. A blue overcast from the cigars hid the ceiling of the smoking room.
"Ah, yes, Captain Carrot," said a chair. "Yes, indeed. But is he the right man?"
"He's got a birthmark shaped like a crown. I've seen it," said Nobby helpfully.
"But his background?"
"He was raised by dwarfs," said Nobby. He waved his brandy glass at a waiter. "Same again, mister."
"I shouldn't think dwarfs could raise anyone very high," said another chair. There was a hint of laughter.
"Rumours and folklore," someone murmured. "This is a large and busy and above all complex city. I'm afraid that having a sword and a birthmark are not much in the way of qualifications. We would need a king from a lineage that is used to command."
"Like yours, my lord."
There was a sucking, draining noise as Nobby attacked the fresh glass of brandy.
"Ah, oh, I'm used to command, all right," he said, lowering the glass. "People are always ordering me around."
"We would need a king who had the support of the great families and major guilds of the city."
"People like Carrot," said Nobby.
"Oh, the people."
"Anyway, whoever'd got the job would have his work cut out," said Nobby. "Old veterinary's always pushing paper. What kind of fun is that? It's no life, sitting up all hours, worrying, never a moment to yourself."
He held out the empty glass.
"Same again, me old mate. Fill it right up this time, eh? No sense in having a great big glass and only sloshing a bit in the bottom, is there?"
"Many people prefer to savour the bouquet," said a quietly horrified chair. "They enjoy sniffing it."
Nobby looked at his glass with the red-veined eyes of one who'd heard rumours about what the upper crust got up to.
"Nah," he said. "I'll go on sticking it in me mouth if it's all the same to you."
"If we may get to the point," said another chair, "a king would not have to spend every moment running the city. He would, of course, have people to do that. Advisers, councillors, people of experience."
"So what did he have to do?" said Nobby.
"He'd have to reign," said a chair.
"Wave."
"Preside at banquets."
"Sign things." "Guzzle good brandy disgustingly." "Reign." "Sounds like a good job to me," said Nobby. "All right for some, eh? Of course a king would have to be someone who could recognise a hint if it was dropped on his head from a great height," said a speaker sharply, but the other chairs shushed him into silence.
Nobby managed to find his mouth after several goes and took another long pull at his cigar.
"Seems to me," he said, "seems to me, what you want to do is find some knob with time on his hands and say, 'Yo, it's your lucky day. Let's see you wave that hand.'"
"Ah, that's a good idea. Does any name cross your mind, my lord? Have a drop more brandy."
"Why, thanks, you're a toff. Oh, of course, so am I, eh? That's right, flunky, all the way to the top. Nah, can't think of anyone that fits the bill.
In fact, my lord, we were indeed thinking of offering the crown to you."
Nobby's eyes bulged, and then his cheek bulged. It's not a good idea to spray finest brandy across the room, especially when your lighted cigar is in the way. The flame hit the far wall, where it left a perfect chrysanthemum of scorched woodwork, while, in accordance with a fundamental rule of physics, Nobby's chair screamed back on its casters and thudded into the door.
"King?"
Nobby coughed, and then they had to slap him on the back until he got his breath again.
"King?" he wheezed. "And have Mr. Vimes cut me head off?"
"All the brandy you can drink, my lord," said a wheedling voice.
"No good if you ain't got a throat for it to go down."
"What are you talking about? Mr. Vimes would go spare. He'd go spare."
"Good heavens, man."
"My lord," someone corrected.
"My lord, I mean, when you're king, you can tell that wretched Sir Samuel what to do. You'll be, as you would call it, the boss. You could..."
"Tell old Stoneface what to do," said Nobby.
"That's right. I'd be a king and tell old Stoneface what to do," said Nobby.
"Yes."
Nobby stared into the smoky gloom.
"He'd go spare." "'Listen, you silly little man, my lord, you silly little lord. "'You'd be able to have him executed if you wished.'
"'I couldn't do that.'
"'Why not?'
"'He's gold spare.'
"'The man calls himself an officer of the law, and whose law does he listen to, eh? "'Where does his law come from?'
"'I dunno,' groaned Nobby. "'He says it comes up through his boots.'
"'He looked around. "'The shadows in the smoke seemed to be closing in.
"'I can't be king!'
"'Old Vimes would go spare. "'Will you stop saying that?'
"'Nobby pulled at his collar.
"'It's a bit hot and smoky in here,' he mumbled. "'Which way's the window?'
"'Over there.' "'The chair rocked. "'Nobby hit the glass, helmet first, "'landed on top of a waiting carriage, "'bounced off and ran into the night, "'trying to escape destiny in general "'and axes in particular.'